Money Show with Bruce Whitfield on 702 for the curious on 92.7 and 106 FM.
The Money Show, brought to you by Nedbank. Looking at money from every angle leads to better money decisions. See money differently. Nedbank, good evening. Welcome to The Money Show this Friday night. Ghulam Balim, the chief economist at Standard Bank, standing by to talk to us this evening all about the State of the Nation address, the big, ugly, hairy truths that came out of it, and the sense of optimism that has really had so many people around the country, certainly in the social interactions today, people feeling a lot better about the country than they did this time last year, and considerably better than they did this time 2 years ago. Full of feel good, but who's going to pay for it all, and who's going to do the work? Sasol, big issues there with its US Lake Charles project. We'll talk to David Peacock, our market commentator, about that, as well as Woolies getting a lesson in not stealing other people's ideas. Essentially, the biggest admission of guilt we've seen from Woolworths so far, in there with not only the withdrawal of the Ubuntu Baba lookalike product that they appropriated without compensation from an entrepreneur in Cape Town. They are paying money to foundations and doing all sorts of good things as a result of being busted. So we'll talk about that. They're not talking. They haven't been talking. They're hiding behind veils of corporatese. And so I'll read to you parts of their statement this evening. I think it's important that you get a good idea of just how much of a, I think the term is, in EFF terms, a snot club. And they've been given that unequivocally as a result of an entrepreneur standing up for herself in a most impressive fashion. We'll talk about the election date. We'll talk about the best bits of The Money Show from the week that has been. And, of course, because it's Friday, let's finish with the Brutal Biz Quiz, all in the next 50 minutes or so.
The Money Show with Bruce Whitfield. Live. Online. Smartphones. DSTV. And 92.7. And
for 90 minutes last FM. Night, and perhaps a little longer, depending on your sense of emotion, it was really good to be a South African all over again before the cynicism and the doubt crept back into whether or not the president, for all of his good intentions, would be able to deliver on his wide-ranging hopes, ambitions, gains, and targets for a country, as he delivered in the State of the Nation address last night. Ghulam Balim is the chief economist at Standard Bank and is on the line to us from Johannesburg this evening. Ghulam, a good speech, but can it be delivered on?
It can. So you are celebrating the speech, and I think that in itself is a success to the extent that South Africa requires, needs a decisive policy agenda to unshackle it from many years of economic malaise. And I suspect many will therefore cheer that the speech incorporated that ambition. It is ambitious, and it has to be, especially given that growth is beneath the population rate and is quite low, and at least 3 percentage points beneath the trend rate of growth that was prevalent about a decade ago. Can he deliver? Within the confines of a social compact, I think the president can. And that was one of the golden threads throughout his speech.
The political analyst Daniel Silk saying it's really a manifesto launch dressed up as a State of the Nation address, which is quite harsh, but perhaps a fair remark considering it is an election year, of course.
Well, I'm not too concerned thereby. After all, manifestos of any particular party should mate with prevailing economic and socio-economic times, so I don't think it's really intellectually necessary to debate the differences between taking the temperature with respect to where South Africa is growth in terms of its growth paradigm, what the diagnostics has been done at great length in recent years. And we know there's a variety of immediate agenda items. For example, Eskom, which is injecting oxygen into the economy, needs balance sheet repair, and that was addressed. The president recognized, for example, also that all growth endeavor needs to respect a free market. And so references to the land matter, the land debate, and tilting towards a more becalmed solution was emblematic also of what the president sought to suggest. So I think across a variety of areas, as a state of the nation can do one speech in as you suggest, 90 minutes, was fairly comprehensive, fairly ambitious, spoke to political, macro and microeconomic reforms that South Africa knows it needs to undertake.
Absolutely. And I mean, very few people in business or in markets would disagree for a moment about the need to break up Eskom. But the problem there is vested interests. And we saw what happened this time last year when Pravin Gordhan, as the newly chosen member of public, Minister of Public Enterprises, tried to encourage people at Eskom not to take an increase last year. And that came unstuck very, very quickly as trades unions dug in their heels, and they made life very difficult for a short period of time, threatening once again to object and protest and try to block the president's ambitions to do what is so necessary to keep Eskom alive.
Bruce, there are probably three pillars of endeavor that President Ramaphosa needs to journey on over the coming months and years. The first is he needs to fortify his power within the party. We're well aware with respect to the factionalism. And I think he's done well thus far outside of the party, meaning SOEs, cabinet, quasi-government institutions, given the slim margin of success in December 2017. The second pillar hints at what you now refer to. In other words, finding that balance between, on the one hand, reforms, and on the other, the combination of radical economic transformation combined with job preservation, especially at public entities. And straddling that is going to be incredibly difficult. It speaks to the holy cows. It speaks to the militancy and potency of unions. It also alludes to recognition that the unions are now largely public sector based, having shed a great deal of private sector representation that was their forte about 15 years ago. And so in an environment of fading union densification, in other words, diminishing union representation throughout the South African labor force, and with the bias now tilted towards the public sector, and it's a little bit of a suggestion, of a stretch to say the unions are fighting for their life, but we are in somewhat of a Thatcherite moment. And I think Cyril Ramaphosa needs to hand this with kid gloves. Admittedly, there's been clumsiness, as epitomized by the land debate, tussling between those who want land now in and maybe distributed in a reckless manner, damaging property rights, but sometimes also with populist and political motives, and at the same time recognizing that South Africa has got a very legitimate land hunger. So these, admittedly, the speech crafts very elegant words towards these ambitions, but that is what great leadership is going to be about in the coming quarters.
But it does feel as if for the first time we actually have a vision that we can aspire to. It was a big and bold speech. It was a courageous speech in many respects, considering the politics of the day. Also, something that may be unpopular within his own ranks is the reintroduction, and this is as much of a political story as it is an economic story, because without proper prosecution of economic crime, you can't have economic success, and therefore the reintroduction of a scorpions-like unit within the National Prosecuting Authority is a very, very significant, albeit potentially hazardous path to go down as politically.
In the opening paragraphs of the speech, one would miss it if one was not paying attention. He alludes to a period of uncertainty and a loss of confidence and trust. And while he didn't explicitly make reference on this occasion to nine lost years, he is alluding to the monumental breach of trust that, of course, occurred under the previous regime and through much of the last decade, especially in the last 5 years. Re-establishing that trust and foremost establishing and injecting a pervasive sense of accountability is the foundation stone. And I think we are already fairly mature in that journey of re-establishing institutions. The anti-crime task force, ironically labeled under former President Jacob Zuma, but that is being re-established and with verve in a way many wouldn't have imagined. That's a foundation stone. I a moment ago hinted at the third pillar, and I was about to get to it when it slipped my mind, but let me just quickly re-engage. The third pillar, which is fundamental to, as you say, delivering on this utopia, this ambition, is the president delivering an ANC-led victory in the forthcoming elections? The president needs a mandate, a significant and substantial mandate that fortifies him for the next 5 years and allows him to, as you suggest, carry through and be more decisive in that agenda from the second half of this year. Without that mandate, he himself will be vulnerable. He's vulnerable to recall. He's vulnerable to being a one-term president, meaning he could only last till 2024. Remember, his first term will only start when the ANC wins the next election, to the extent that that has come to transpire. So, in short, there are these various markers, milestones that need to be overcome, need to be accomplished, in addition to the milestones, and monumentally so, that have been achieved last year. That's part of what we would refer to as a multi-year reform process with multi-generational consequences.
Sure. I mean, say that again, please. A multi-year process with multi-generational consequences. And that's the brutal reality of it. I mean, our children are going to pay off, are still going to be paying for the lost 10 years. And if we don't get a quick and speedy turnaround, an economic turnaround that is beneficial for everybody in the country, our grandchildren are going to be paying for it.
So to reduce all of the 90 minutes to a single metric, South Africa requires at the minimum 2.5% annualized GDP for the foreseeable future. And I say minimum, and I suggest that figure. Why? That figure delivers a degree in, fact, sustainable debt consolidation. That figure is also the minimum for which we can engender employment creation and a subsidence in the unemployment rate. So that all in the social compact, the assault on crime and corruption, the allure that South Africa seems to prefer to foreign and local investors, is all with that single ambition.
And are you excited that we struck oil, or an oil-like substance, or at least a substance that can be refined into fuel in the future, possibly a billion barrels? Brol Butter? I love the name. Are you enticed by that? I mean, potentially, if there's one discovery, there could be more.
So, you know, at the minimum, that's not going to deliver for another 4 or 5 years.
Yeah.
So I'm not wishing to temper the charm surrounding this find. Certainly, it's welcome. It can, as the president suggests, be both transformative and catalytic. And just the investment journey before even that hydrocarbons are drawn would in itself be material. And we see such an episode unfolding in Mozambique that could transform that economy from a village to a mega city, as a metaphor. So I am excited, and I'm excited in the sense that hydrocarbon discoveries these days are seated in far more better governed locations or political situations, I should suggest. And so I think, in other words, the failure over the last 50 years throughout sub-Saharan Africa, or at least up until the mid-1990s, 50 years up until mid-1990s, was because the policy framework and Africa was led by big men. And I think we have now a reformist leader in South Africa, similarly in Angola or Ethiopia. And these hydrocarbon finds, seating themselves in a more progressive, reformist political environment, means that the rents can certainly, with greater probability, find their way to citizens. And it could be a tonic for our fiscal woes.
Well, certainly could be. Gulan Balim, beautifully expressed as always. Thank you, the chief economist at Standard Bank.
EWN Traffic.
Sandton, slight delays on Sandton Drive out of the CBD towards William Nicol, and traffic lights in Rand Park Ridge at Beyers Nodier and the November 1 South are out of order. They're also out in Fleerhof on Main Drift at Herbert, and in the south at Steeldale at Heidelberg Road and Southern Klepperviersberg. Please approach the junction William Nicol Street and Constantia Boulevard carefully, because that's also out. And in the city of Tshwane, no traffic lights in Sunnyside at Robert Sobukwe and late. Tseho Modisani, EWN Traffic.
EWN Traffic. The Money Show.
The Markets.
Oh, some of you are funny. Some of you can't be repeated on air. Some of you are downright despicable and rude. But that's the funniest. I wish I could read you this SMS. No, it's too rude. Broadcast Complaints Commission would have a field day with it, even though it's not my quote. But it's something to do with why I'm so inclined to accept the president at his word that he's terribly keen, to make a difference in the country. But yes, very funny. Thank you so much for being so humorous. David Peacock is with Sanlam Private Wealth. He is our market commentator this evening. We need to talk about Sasol, David Peacock. We need to talk about a market that turned from buoyant and excited on Wednesday to downright dull and miserable by Friday. Some lazy commentators may be inclined to suggest that this was because of great disappointment around the State of the Nation address. If anything, it's anything but.
Bruce, I would agree with you there. I would say that our market is moving in line with international markets at the moment. So just from a Sona perspective, you know, the sort of our general feeling is fairly positive. You know, obviously we've got the budget coming up in the next couple of weeks that will also give guidance in terms of exactly how policy is going to formulate and effectively how that is going to be funded going forward. So from my perspective, I would say, you know, our market is really just following international markets.
Yeah.
You know, clearly in terms of the sort of concerns that we've been seeing in the last few days of a reduction in growth in developed markets and that sort of thing, clearly is just playing through, and you can see it in terms of the sort of move towards the commodity stocks. So for example, you know, you're seeing, for example, the gold price a little bit firmer, some of the gold miners looking up and have been performing quite well in the last while. And then recently with the earnings coming out of the platinum stocks, you've seen improvements in the platinum stocks as well.
Most certainly have, and it's gratifying. It is gratifying to see. The one part of the market that is not performing particularly well and took a big fat smack today was Sasol. And Daniel on the SMS line this evening said the price weakness on Sasol should be treated as an opportunity. A few months' delay is immaterial, and once commissioned, Lake Charles will generate buckets of cash as the capex drops to almost zero. Now, the reason why Daniel is sending that message is because Sasol's share price was down 6% on the day to 384 Rand. They've announced delays of up to 5 months, $500 million in extra costs, taking the cost of this Lake Charles ethane cracker project to 160 billion Rand so far. I mean, these guys, this is power station sort of numbers.
Yeah.
And it really smacks of an insufficient attention to detail.
Bruce, unfortunately, the one thing that has been consistent with Sasol is its consistency in terms of this Lake Charles being delayed and these increased sort of levels of capex that need to be funded the whole time. I think the market was disappointed because as we headed through the last earnings, you know, report that came out sort of last year, just in terms of expectations of Lake Charles and the fact that it was going to be online, the market was underestimating the benefit of the fact it was online, no further capex, as well as, you know, the US president's tax cuts would really have a big impact. So again, unfortunately, Lake Charles has come through where there's delays, further 500 million that needs to be spent, and the fact that we'll probably only see things coming on in the next couple of months. So, you know, the market, from my perspective, was really looking at that benefit coming through and has disappointed. So the question obviously is going forward from here, you know, are there not going to be potential further delays? Because a big component of the benefit of Sasol is moving from an oil play to a chemicals and plastics business, and obviously the improved profit margins that would be seen there, and clearly that is, you know, that's not coming through. So you've had sort of price targets move from north of 600 Rand to, you know, sort of mid 550 Rand, which is a fairly significant pullback.
It is, and it comes down to the view you have of the management team at Sasol as to whether or not you trust their assessments. And they keep moving the goalposts, it becomes increasingly difficult to trust those assessments in terms of their ability to deliver a project on time and in budget when they keep pushing out the budgets and pushing out the targets for completion.
Correct.
It does come down to credibility, unfortunately. And my interpretation, and forgive my interpretation if it's wrong, is that you're not giving them the benefit of the doubt and the credibility war just yet.
Yeah, I would say so. I would say that in terms of the reasons for buying Sasol, those were the reasons. The dividend yield has also been very attractive. So from that perspective, as a dividend play, the fact that the shares dropped fairly significantly, it's definitely worth looking at. But obviously, your sort of time frame in terms of getting that return that was expected is going to be extended.
Yeah, and it is deeply disappointing, especially since Total, you've got to call it the French way of Total, struck oil off the South African coast. And I know it's not particularly much. I mean, there are 1 billion barrels there, which in global oil terms is a drop in the ocean. And it'll be expensive to extract, and it'll bring all the wrong sorts of people into the mix to try and capitalize on the deals that will come about as a result of finding oil off the south coast of Africa. But what a potential uplift it holds for us.
Yes, well, I was going to say, besides all your negative points, there are some positives.
I'm not being negative. What am I doing? I'm giving a realistic perspective based on the experience of the lost decade that we've experienced as a country. We just are cynical because we've been robbed for so long.
Exactly right, Bruce. So from that perspective, I would say that this would be sort of akin to winning the lotto as an individual, on the basis that if the process is followed properly, the red tape is cut, and we can get on with this, then it will add significant value to the South African economy and obviously to you know, the whole spectrum of SA. So that would be very positive. But again, this is going to take 4 years, 5 years, whatever, to get this actually up and running. But at least it is a positive move from that perspective.
It most certainly is. And David Peacock with Sanlam Private Wealth this evening. Thank you very much indeed for joining us tonight, David. Wrapping up today's market activity, real concerns around global growth once again coming to the fore, weighing on markets. And it's this perpetual sort of boom and bust mentality of markets at the moment. Things are either recovering because everyone's talking and being nice to each other, or things are kind of come to a sticky end because people aren't talking as nicely to each other anymore. And sometimes you just have to look through the noise and try and figure out what's a good price to buy a share for. And if Sasol fits into that category at $380 a share or thereabouts, then, according to Daniel, at least, who's a regular correspondent to The Money Show, it's time to buy some shares in Sasol. That's his perspective this evening. But some big concerns around the credibility of management and their ability to call whether or not Sasol is actually not going to have further demands on its balance sheet. So I warned you earlier that, I told you, and I didn't warn you. It's not really a warning kind of story, but it's a warning to Woolworths and other large corporations to not steal people's ideas. There's been a joint statement, finally, more than a month after the story broke about the Ubuntu Baba baby carrier, which the founder accused Woolworths of copying. And there were some extraordinary similarities, and Woolworths admitted at the time it withdrew its product from the market. And she wasn't going to wasn't going to take it sitting down. And she went in, really fighting her corner, not only as an entrepreneur whose idea was taken without compensation, but somebody who wanted Woolworths to really reconsider their approach to the way in which they treat other people's intellectual property. And Woolworths is saying, we'll be putting additional measures in to avoid a similar incident arising in future. Therefore, it's basically admitting that they did nick the idea. Some examples include measures of intellectual property e-learning modules to ensure a wide reach of training, increased intellectual property training when employees and relevant suppliers. I mean, that doesn't help unless you have a change of attitude at the very top, I'm afraid. Shannon McLaughlin has taught that lesson to Woolworths very, very strongly. Woolworths won't retain any profits from the sale of its baby carriers. It'll donate a portion of those proceeds to what they call a credible institution, a view to educate, support, and develop SMEs in South Africa. Good. The remaining proceeds will be paid to Ubuntu Baba. There are no numbers mentioned here, but Shannon McLaughlin did post this on her own website, and therefore I assume she is in agreement with the statement. But Woolworths saying the concerns raised by Ubuntu Baba around Woolworths' instructions for the baby carriers are being resolved. And this was because she said, although you copied my baby carrier, you're not telling people how to use it properly, and that's dangerous for babies. So they're dealing with that as well. And Woolworths, it's interesting Finally, investigations into the matter have confirmed that the two Woolworths employees referenced in Ubuntu Baba's blog purchased the Ubuntu Baba carriers as legitimate mothers-to-be who work in Woolworths but in completely unrelated departments. A lot of people aren't going to believe that one, I'm afraid. There are just far too many coincidences there. That's Woolworth's statement on the matter. You decide whether or not you choose to believe it. Shannon McLaughlin has got something out of it. She's also won an incredible moral victory and has given Woolworths a lesson, frankly, in how they should be operating as a responsible corporate citizen. Still disappointed, Ian Moyer, that you haven't responded to our repeated requests to come and talk about ethics at the top of the organisation and why it is that Woolworths keeps getting caught out doing this sort of stuff.
The Money Show is brought to you by Nedbank. Looking at money from every angle leads to better money decisions. See money differently. Nedbank.
So if you own your own business, you're going to be terribly worried about productivity between April and May. You really are. And it's a complete dog show of public holidays. It really is. Now with the election on the 8th of May, and the election is always a public holiday, there are going to be 4 weeks in a row that contain only four working days. And for so many people, there won't be four working days at all because people will try and capitalize on the public holidays and try and maximize their leave. I wonder what's going to happen to the economy in April and May this year. I wonder. We always got the April problem of public holidays, but it's exacerbated once every 5 years when we have an election. And then we'll have another State of the Nation address, of course, very soon after that, within a month probably of the election. And once the results have been finalized, there'll be another loss of productivity as well. Oh, so much loss. So many losses of productivity. On your next Money Show, Bruce and Bruce, the other Bruce Fordyce. He's the guy who runs a lot. Marathon and ultramarathon, the comrades legend in the Make Money Mondays feature. Look forward to that. All about his attitude towards money and what he's doing with bringing Parkrun to South Africa. And chartered accountant Chris Sloan has written a brand new book about using common sense to build financial independence. Easy to read advice. It really is a very good little book. We'll talk all about that on the next Money Show.
The Money Show with Bruce Whitfield. Live. Online. Smartphones. DSTV. And 92.7. And 106 FM.
Welcome to The Money Show. I'm Bruce Whitfield. It is Friday night. We'll play the Brutal Biz quiz in just a little while. But first, let's wrap up some of the big stories of the week that has been. And of course, we had the State of the Nation address, but we also had the mining in Durban happening in Cape Town. And it was extraordinary. For the first time in years, there was actually a sense of optimism and confidence, not only at the State of the Nation address, but also at the mining in Durban. And I hadn't heard Roger Baxter, Chief Executive of the Minerals Council of South Africa, sounding chirpy for a very long time. Of course, the mining in Durban is not an easy place to judge the temperature of a mining industry, but he was very positive on the overall tone of the mining in Durban, even though he said there's still some kinks that need to be straightened out in terms of mining and mining policy.
I think there's a couple of issues. I mean, obviously, the one is continuing consequences on renewals. So that's one issue that still needs to be resolved in due course. But let's face it, the charter is a significantly improved document from what we saw the previous versions that came out, which were imposing a whole bunch of extra taxes on the industry without much real impact on transformation. So we've got a much better workable outcome. And, you know, if we just take exploration, the new charter opens up basically doesn't put any ownership requirements on exploration, and that's an area South Africa has done dismally badly over the last decade, and so that's the pipeline of new projects has been weaker than it actually should be, and so that's one area where we're working with government to try and get to reignite exploration, which is the pipeline for new projects, and that's one area where really good progress has been made.
And we've seen since then, of course, the announcement, the official announcement of Total's discovery of a billion barrels of gas that can be turned into fuel at Brul Pada, south of Plet. And it's a good news story. We did speak, of course, about this on The Money Show earlier this week. Nirej Sanjay Mensa was at Frost & Sullivan saying we really need to see Eskom being broken into three different parts. We also this week spoke in our business books feature to Gigi Alcock. Now, Gigi Alcock is an extraordinary individual. Google him if you don't believe me. He wrote a book called Kazinomics, and now he's written a new one called Kazinomic Revolution, talking about the informal sector, and how if you look down your nose at the informal sector, you will miss out, because the informal sector does a lot of good work in terms of keeping our economy afloat. There are lots of grey goods in there, of course. Lots of the cigarettes that have no tax paid on them are sold in that informal sector. But there is a huge amount of economic activity, which if harnessed, could actually improve South Africa's growth numbers. He crunched some numbers for us, and of course you can get the full interview on our podcast. It really is worth listening to if you missed it, and then you'll just simply want to buy the book. But here's Gigi Alcock on Monday's Money Show.
You just look at some of the sectors, for instance, the Gasi Gos or the township takeaway industry is worth more than 87 billion rand a year. If you look at the retail sector, the FMCG kind of spaza sector, as it's called, that's worth probably around between 150 and 250 billion rand a year. So even little obscure categories like the Muti industry is worth 3 billion rand a year, which is traditional medicine. There are these massive industries there. I'm not even counting the hair care industry or the building industry or the gassy mechanics, the township mechanics and panel beating industry, the building industry. Just the township rental of back rooms and spazas to immigrant traders is between 30 and 50 billion rands a year in income. And, you don't find a township home that doesn't have 2 to 3 little back rooms. They're renting them out between 1,200 and 800 rand per room. So, if you look at that kind of those incomes, those are incomes that are in essence stimulating our economy. If you took the formal economy, the numbers of people earning a salary, and you looked at the amount of spend in the economy, there's no way that the formal employment sector is driving that.
It's Gigi Alcock. It's a really good book, and there are numbers in there, there's data in there that will blow your mind as to what happens in the informal sector. You do dismiss it at your peril. Don't. Finally, Siv Ngesi, Sivuyile Ngesi, comedian, actor, very serious actor now as well, in films and things. He's done adverts, and he's a buff individual. He really is, and a lovely guy too, and funny. He also touched on the township economy when I asked about his early memories of how he could make some money in our Make Money Monday special edition. That happened also on Monday.
My grandfather used to sell fruit. One of my biggest influences. He was a great man. He called him Vit Boy. So when I was 4, 5, 6, whatever, when we had no money, he used to get into his car, had no license, had a sub B, right? But he had a car. He could put a car together. And he used to get in the car and we would become a taxi. And we used to make money. I used to be the guy key taking people's money at 4 or 5 years old. And we'd go and we'd collect all this money. And then we'd buy sheep heads together and eat sheep heads together. It's the most amazing memory I have of my grandfather. He passed away, but we used to sit and eat, dissect sheep head, the tongue, everything, sell fruit. So he was a big hustler and a big influence of mine. And then my grandmother had a Shabin and...
But there's no way to better learn the mechanisms of profit margins, understanding the cost in, price out, and understanding what it takes to turn a profit in a business when you are working on really tough margins like that.
Now, I was raised in a Shabin. My grandmother had a Shabin. We used to kick people out late nights. We used to pour tarts, go back, do all these things. And I won that place. So it's funny, when you brought it up now, I've only thought of it now, that's where it all started.
Almost certainly did. Siv Ngesi, a funny guy and serious actor and investor in projects. And he's a very busy guy, Siv Ngesi. Watch this guy. He's got a long and varied career ahead of him. Wrapping up today's best bits of The Money Show. You can get those best bits in more detail, the entire interviews, via our website. You can go to wherever you usually get your Money Show podcasts. And of course, you can download those podcasts and share them. Feel free to share them. We don't mind if you share them. In fact, we like it when you share The Money Show podcasts and share it with as many people as you possibly can. Coming up next, the Brutal Biz Quiz, as we always do on a Friday night. And I would like to know, please, which company has changed its name to African Global Operations? That is the first question in tonight's Brutal Biz Quiz on 011-883-0702, 021-446-0567. What is African Global Operations, better known as?
The Money Show is brought to you by NetBank. Looking at money from every angle leads to better money decisions. See money differently. NetBank. The Money Show.
The Brutal Biz Quiz.
So So which company has changed its name to African Global Operations? Nomisa's gone. CPWare's gone. Oh, that's sad. Let's try again. No, gone. Gone, gone, gone. Oh, my goodness me. That's very sad. Which company has changed its name to African Global Operations? Ria?
It is Bosasa.
Bosasa, absolutely right. This week, five arrests have been made, including a former Bosasa chief operating officer, Angelo Agrizi. They all got bail, so they didn't have to eat their own food in prison overnight. What is the Afrikaans name for the prospect block where Total has discovered a big gas deposit?
Could you please repeat that?
What is the Afrikaans name for the prospect of the block where Total has discovered a big gas deposit?
Ooh. Oh, no, I don't know that one.
Burp. Okay, no problem, Maria. Thank you for playing. Burp. Where is this? I've mentioned it three times tonight because I just love the name so much. Ribbit. Where is the ribbit? Where is this block? What is it? What is it called in Afrikaans? It's an Afrikaans name. Total has discovered this big gas deposit. Who knows the name of this big gas deposit? That's what we're looking for this evening. Julian, how is your knowledge of animals?
I hope it's good enough. Brulpara.
Brulpara. Ribbit is absolutely right. 1 billion barrels of total resources. And that'll be good for countries' oil and gas suppliers and some investment as well. Last night, the president announced that Eskom would be split into three entities. There's generation, there's transmission, and what is the third business?
Is it distribution?
Very good, Julian. Very good indeed. Hmm. Yes, it is most certainly distribution. The American pharmacist John Stith Pemberton is best known as the inventor of which product?
This is one of my questions to John. It's Coca-Cola.
Coca-Cola is absolutely right. The John you refer to is John Matham, of course, on Cape Talk. You're phoning from Cape Town. Yes, in May 1886, he developed Coca-Cola, and we had the head of Coca-Cola Beverages Africa in studio on Wednesday. Final question for you this evening. Which British multinational banking and financial services company pled guilty this week to manipulating currencies, including the rand? Which one was it? Which one of these bad big banks was it?
And I read the article.
It's not Absa. It's not Nedbank. It's not First Rand. It's part of. It used to be part of
Standard Chartered.
Did I hear that you say Standard Chartered? Then you, the wizard of the biz quiz. I think Standard Chartered at one point owned Standard Bank many, many years ago, but that relationship is long since dead. And yes, Standard Chartered paying a big fat fine for fiddling with the currencies. That is it from The Money Show for today and for this week. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you for playing along. Thank you for your communications with us. Thank you for keeping us in touch with what's happening in your world and your life. If you've got some good stories for us, our email addresses are my producers and mine, available on our website. You can contact me via Twitter or during the show. It's never a bad idea to drop us an SMS. One preferably with fewer expletives than some of you were expressing about the President's State of the Nation address. You really do need to understand the issues, understand the difficulties, understand the consequences of it all going awry before you get too angry with a speech. After all, it was just a speech. The one that's going to be the big test, of course, is going to be the budget speech and the detail of the budget documentation as to how it's all going to get paid for. That's the big one in 10 days' time. Good night.